In this podcast, Versa CEO interviews the founder and CEO of Library for All, Rebecca McDonald. Library for All is committed to unlocking knowledge and opportunities for those in developing countries with limited access to educational materials.
So, Rebecca, thanks for joining me today. Obviously, we know each other for a little while, and I was just hoping maybe for those who are listening in that you could give us a little bit of a background, perhaps about yourself, or kind of more importantly, what inspired you to start Library for All?
Yeah, my husband and I actually moved to Haiti in 2010. We saw what had happened during the earthquake and we just felt really moved to go and help. We're both from the construction industry and felt like our skills could be useful. So we packed up, we sold almost everything and we moved to Haiti, which sounds super crazy right now as I really tell that story. And every time I tell it, it sounds crazy. But we really felt like it was what we were supposed to do. And we worked on lots of different projects there. But one of the things that just struck me so deeply was that every school I went to had nothing, no materials, no resources, no books. And I couldn't understand how you could possibly get an education if you had access to no materials. And I just sort of, it really affected me, but I didn't know anything about libraries. I didn't know anything about books or publishing. As I said, from the construction industry. So I just kind of parked it in the back of my mind and didn't really think there was much I could do about it. And it was probably about 6 months later, I was doing research for myself. We were still living in Haiti and I was doing some research to buy an e-reader for myself. I'd run out of books. My half a suitcase of books had now gone and I was desperate for some more books. And so I started looking at electronic devices and what I could do while I was living in Haiti. And the idea for Library for All just literally struck me like a lightning bolt. I can't explain it any other way. And I just had this really vivid picture about a digital library and an expanse of books available to the kids in Haiti. And it just, the idea of the library just wouldn't leave me. And so I decided to allow myself weekends and night times to research the space and really get to know and understand what was happening with digital libraries. And I was really saddened that after 3 months of research, I hadn't found a single scalable model. And I wanted the kids to have access to what I'd had as a kid, you know, a full library, so that what they get excited about and what makes them want to read is what they find. So yeah, so it started from there and I just thought, okay, what do I do now? So I started actually just reaching out to publishers and seeing if they'd be willing to support the effort. And to my surprise, many said yes straight away and they didn't laugh at me. And so I thought, okay, we might have something here. We might actually be able to get this off the ground. And so that's where Library for All began.
Great. And when was that, Rebecca?
That was 2012 that we actually got going. The idea came in 2011.
Cool. And so in terms of, I suppose, just explain exactly how Library for All works today, maybe if you kind of give us an overview of how the system works or how the program works and where it's live today as of September 2015.
Yeah, so we are a cloud-based library platform designed specifically to work in low-bandwidth communities that have little or no access to books. And we focus our efforts on communities that, you know, when you look at them and you visit them, you realize that they have other issues as well. So they're low bandwidth. Obviously, internet is a challenge, but also it's expensive. And the groups that we're trying to reach to buy physical books or to pay for internet is really expensive and totally cost prohibitive. And so that's the area that we work in. So we specifically built the platform to be delivered over mobile phone networks and to be able to reach the poorest communities and deliver ebooks that are culturally relevant and language appropriate for those communities. And we highly curate the collection. You know, we could have easily just dumped 100,000 out of copyright books into the library, but we just aren't prepared to do that. You know, obviously delivering in low bandwidth environments, you've got to take file sizes and all that kind of stuff into account. And so you want to have the most appropriate collection that your readers are desperately going to want to get hands on rather than having to sort through the things that they don't care about. Mm. And so that's why we really take a huge amount of effort and time to curate a library. And the great thing is that we don't for a second pretend that we know what our readers want to read. You know, even living in Haiti for 2.5 to 3 years, didn't make me a Haitian authority and certainly didn't make me an expert in what the kids of Haiti want to read. So we actually put together advisory boards for each of the countries we work in, and they're filled with people from the publishing industry, from those countries, teachers, professors, authors, and they're just an incredible group of people that help us curate the library. And it's especially when you're working in local languages as well, you absolutely need that local language experience to be able to make sure that the content is relevant and good and really high quality. So that's the way we go about it.
Cool. And to my knowledge, at the moment, you are live in Haiti. You recently launched in Rwanda, and I believe you either had a launch or are about to launch in Southeast Asia as well.
Yeah, we're also in the... So Haiti was our first country. We launched a pilot there in 2013. And then we launched the actual product, the cloud-based library, in 2014 in Haiti. And then we launched in the Democratic Republic of Congo that same year. And as you said, we just recently launched in Rwanda, which was really exciting. And Cambodia's next. By the beginning of November, we'll have launched in Cambodia, which we're really excited about. It's our first foray into Asia, and we're really excited about it.
Great. So kind of to recap, Rebecca, you're going into countries that have little or no resources and infrastructure. You're allowing them to access books digitally. You obviously have to be mindful of the digital infrastructure that's in these countries, but you're doing it obviously on a very, I suppose, considered and in some ways a slow pace, but deliberately so, because you want to make sure that these countries have the right infrastructure for you to be able to come in with your platform. What does a roadmap hold for Library for All then? Where's next?
Oh, we have this long list of countries. One of the things that we find really important and that we've identified as kind of one of the key pieces that we have to put in place whenever we launch a country is strategic partnerships, specifically with telecommunications companies. It's one of the first things we do when we go into a country. We negotiate with the telecommunications companies to zero rate the library and to remove that barrier for the poorest in the community to be able to use the internet to download the books. And so that means that there is no data charges for the user to download books, to download the app that's built for that country, and to continually update their library on their device. And so that's one of the key things we have to do. And so we are very slow and deliberate, because we know that without that, we just can't deliver to the people that we're trying to reach the most. And the way that we do that is that we choose the devices that are most relevant in that country. So we don't come with this perspective that you must use this device to access Library for All. We come from the opposite end, and we do a lot of research in what is actually being used in that country already. What is the take-up rate of, for instance, in Rwanda, it's low-end smartphones that are actually dominating the market. Whereas because of a tax on smartphones, we don't see that in Haiti. It's low-cost tablets that schools are starting to invest in. And because of the local manufacturer there, and low-end smartphones haven't made much of an impact yet. And so we really look at what is being used in that country first and foremost, and then we make the changes to our platform to be able to download our app onto those devices so that it works perfectly. And so we are slow and steady, but at the same time, we're super ambitious. So we have two more Asian countries that we're looking at for early next year. Mongolia and the Philippines are already on the planning. And then we're looking at having Rwanda as a really great base for us for that whole East African region. So there's a lot of countries we're getting constantly contacted by, folks in Kenya and Nigeria and Tanzania, all over that region, desperate to get hold of our content and to get hold of our technology. And so we'd like Rwanda to kind of be a base that we can spread out from as we move into these different regions. But next year is going to be very exciting as we're expanding quickly.
Super. And you touched on it earlier, Rebecca, about the fact that when you come into a new country, you look for, I suppose, buy-in from local stakeholders around publishing. And you touched it earlier as well about the cultural importance of the types of books you select for the various different regions. Do you think that Library for All either is or has the potential to influence the types of books and stories and learning and materials that are produced locally in these countries?
Yeah, and I think the influence comes mainly by identifying the gaps. One of the things that we work really hard on is that we digitize, if it's not already digitized, the local curriculum, and we make that available on the platform for teachers across the country. And then what we do is we tag our library to that curriculum. So if it does align with parts of the curriculum, we tag it to make it really easy for them to find it on the platform. And what that process does is it identifies gaps that the local publishers and the international publishers aren't necessarily serving. And so it allows us to feed that information back. It gives us kind of a unique perspective to feed that information back to the publishing industry and identify those gaps and see who wants to kind of take up the challenge to fill them. But also because we're collecting a large amount of data on the back end of what our users are reading, how often they're reading, what they're searching for in the library and they're not finding, that gives us a great jump off point, action point, where we can go out and try and source that material from international publishers or from local publishers. Or if it doesn't exist, then we can again flag it as a gap in the market. So it's really exciting that we have this like ability to kind of be the voice between the users and the producers and to try and speed up the process of delivering what the market's really looking for.
Great. And just kind of last question on the company in general, this is obviously incredibly challenging work. How have you managed to fund the company to date, Rebecca? How's that journey been?
That's always fun. We launched a Kickstarter campaign back in 2013 to fund our pilot because back then we were seen as very risky from the funding community. We were a little bit too innovative for them at the time. That's starting to change. We've got some incredible funders behind us. We've been working with Bloomberg Philanthropies in Rwanda, and we've been working with the Knight Foundation for our project in Haiti. So they've really jumped on board and been hugely supportive of us, and we're really grateful for that. Most of it's come, honestly, from individuals. Most of the work has been able to happen because individuals have seen the potential of what we're trying to do. And it's funny, it's book lovers and people that love the written word that see it and think, yes, you're right, everybody in the world deserves access to books. And, you know, we've had people say that I would die without my library, without my bookshelf of books, you know, and things like that. And they're our people. They're the people that jump on board and donate and support us along the way.
Super. And I suppose that leads us on to the second part of this interview, Rebecca, which is all around, I guess, about publishing, about publishers, about your partners that you have already, and how publishers can help with your mission. So how have you found the response from publishers? You mentioned you reached out to them in the early days to get some initial support. What was that initial support like, and what has been the support since?
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was actually to the major publishers in the beginning. I set up my sites always very high. And so we actually held a digital library huddle is what we called it. And we invited the top 10 publishers to sit around the table and discuss our plan. And they hated some of it and loved most of it, which was very encouraging and kind of just gave us the push along that we needed to make sure that we kind of had industry support. It's been challenging sometimes. You know, some publishers that had desired to reach into some of these markets definitely see it as a challenge and they want to support it, but they're also worried about, you know, us potentially taking away market share. But anybody, that's a really small percentage. Everybody else that we talk to, once you get in front of the decision maker and actually tell them the story and tell them, you know, what's been happening and what it looks like on the ground in these countries, you know, what the publishing industry looks like and what access to books looks like in these countries, they're usually completely shocked at how little is available and they just want to get involved. And we've particularly found small and medium-sized publishers are the fastest to act and activate by actually producing their content, giving it to us. And that's been really encouraging. You know, from day one, you know, almost every small and medium-sized publisher we sit in front of says, yes, how soon can I get involved? How do I get my books? What does that look like? Because we sat down with the major publishers in the beginning and they kind of warned us about DRM and needing to protect the content, that's where we started. You know, we've got an incredible DRM system. The books are encrypted all the way down the line and completely protected. We knew that was going to be a huge stumbling block for publishers. And so we just spent, you know, over a year perfecting that and getting it right. And once we had it right, then it kind of just removed that barrier. It's no longer a concern for publishers now, the security of their books. And so they've been pretty great to jump on board, which is always encouraging.
Great. And a question I was going to ask, Rebecca, is, you know, as somebody who deals with publishers on a day-to-day basis like yourself, I can imagine some of the objections that might come up to, you know, being part of the Library for All program would be, A, you know, I might lose some sales here, but realistically, the countries we're talking about, not only do they not have good technical infrastructures, as you just mentioned, but also they simply don't have access to written books in many cases. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it was funny. In Haiti, I took my team one day, just to really highlight it to them. I took them to a marketplace in Haiti, and I said, okay, now the challenge is to find the most recent published book that you can find. And the most recent book we could find was from 1983. It was a science book, and Pluto was still a planet. So it's just unfortunate that, you know, even published books are really, you know, light on the ground. And it's really the upper echelon of most of these countries that can afford to buy them. Shipping is perilous and very hard to manage. The customs systems in most of these countries are a mess. And so shipping books in for publishers just really isn't an option, not cost effective. And the local publishing industries are often fragmented and very small. In Haiti, there's about 9-ish publishers, one large, the rest are tiny. And, you know, they're really mission-driven. They're doing it because they believe that books are important and the kids deserve to read. They're not really doing it for any other reason. So they might produce a couple of books a year. And so it's really hard, you know, even if you had the money to buy good quality content in these countries.
Gotcha. And you mentioned a minute ago as well that DRM was a concern from publishers in the early days. From my understanding, Rebecca, and without going into too much detail, obviously, the library is app-based, I believe, and therefore it has some kind of inbuilt DRM solution. Is that correct?
Yeah, we actually built it specifically for each country. So when they download it, they can only download the ones built for their country. So right now, I can't even stand here in the office in New York and download any of the country apps. You have to be standing in the country to download the Haiti app or to download the Rwandan app. And that's one of the ways that we protect the content, but also it has DRM encryption all the way down. So it's completely protected. It can't be stolen and copied and passed around, etc.
Great. And in terms of, I suppose, across the countries you're live in right now, what genre of content are you particularly interested in, Rebecca, or are you guys open to everything?
No, we're focused on content that's relevant to K through 12 students. And that's recreational reading as well as educational content. We will expand to adult content in the short to medium term, but right now we're just focused on K through 12. Most of our clients are schools and education providers, and so we just really want to curate the best possible content for that age bracket, which gives us a really wide range, and give them excellent recreational material as well. Because what we found in Haiti, for instance, there's a really deep culture of reading. They desperately want to learn to read and read a lot. Whereas in Rwanda, there's actually not a culture of reading. So one of the things we've been trying to do since the beginning with our partner, we're actually partnered with the First Ladies Foundation there, and we've been trying to instill this reading culture, and they've started a marketing campaign around it and all that kind of stuff as well. And so it just totally depends on each country. But if we can get the most relevant content to our readers, then that's what we're looking for. The language groups is really important as well. So in Rwanda, it's English, and Kinyarwandan is what we've curated, and that's what the education department wants, and that's what the readers want. And then in Haiti, it's French and Creole, for example. So that just gives you a wide range of what we're looking for.
Okay, great. And just so the understanding is clear, the books are available to the children in the schools. Are they able to take these books home with them if they're allowed to take the devices, or what typically happens?
It's totally dependent on the education provider. We don't force anything. It's on them and what device. It totally depends on what device they're delivering it on. So right now in Haiti, it's mostly low-cost tablets, and most of the schools, bar one or two, don't allow the kids to take them home. They have what's called a class set of tablets. And the teacher checks them out for a class. So say they want to use the math textbooks, the math teacher will check the tablets out for the math class and they'll use them and then they'll check them back in. Whereas other schools that have had large amount of tablets donated do allow the students to take them home, but it's totally up to the individual. And whereas Rwanda, it's all home-based right now. We don't start our school pilot until later in the year and roll out early next year. And so it's all low-end mobile phones, smartphones. So it's all home-based in Rwanda right now.
Super. So from a publisher's perspective, again, if I'm a book publisher, I want to get involved with Library for All. How do I start? How can I help?
Well, the great thing is obviously working with yourself and your team. You know, we're trying to make it as easy as possible to get that content. So if it's available through Versa, then once you give permission, Versa can make it available to us. And then we give you a login as the publisher. You get your own login to our backend. You get to stipulate where your books are being given out. The great thing is that's on a book-by-book basis. So say, for instance, you sold your book. You've given it to us for the last 6 months, but that particular book has now been sold to East Africa. You can go in with your login and change that straight away for that individual book, and it's no longer available in Rwanda. or you could let us know and we'll do it for you. So we'll give you your own login. You get to see the data on who's reading your books and where, not the individual child, but the actual location and how many. And you can watch the data and get really excited as we do, as we see what people are reading.
Super. So to finish the interview, Rebecca, could you tell me in just one or two sentences why, as a publisher, I should contribute my books to the Library for All platform?
I hate to say it, but it's the right thing to do. It is a basic human right to be able to read. And without quality reading material, no one is going to learn to read. And so we do absolutely think that it's why we get up every day. It's why we're so passionate about what we do. And we desperately want to partner with more incredible publishers to spread their great content around the world and make it so that more children can learn to read.
Great. So look, this for publishers, and I echo your sentiments. Here at Versa, we have a charitable program that provides a school in Ireland, a school with children with learning difficulties, materials just like Library for All does. So we couldn't be more supportive to you, Rebecca. And I think for all publishers listening out there, this is an opportunity not only to, you know, invest in the right cause, so to speak, but also to invest in the reading future on a widespread basis. These people who are learning to read by virtue of the likes of platforms like Library for All are very much the customers of the future for publishers' books.
Absolutely. That's absolutely how we feel. I'm glad you feel the same. We're very grateful for the partnership with Versa and your support. Thank you so much.
No problem. Rebecca, listen, thank you so much for your time today and look forward to seeing Library for All grow and grow and grow.
Thank you. Thanks, Gareth.
No problem.